Today's program has been brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
You're listening to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Nicole Taylor.
What if the world was vegan? On the phone to talk international recipes for savoring the planet is Terry Hope Romero. She's the author of Vegan Eats World. Terry, welcome back to Hot Grease.
Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, I think you were on when you were promoting Vegan Pie in the Sky. We're delighted to have you back.
Yes, thanks.
I am so jealous, Terry. I didn't realize that you live in Queens. You have all the great food in Queens, New York. How is it to live in Queens every day?
It's pretty fabulous. I'm surrounded by so many different cultures and people, and it's pretty easy to get around. So yeah, I mean, it's really has made a big impact on how I approach food, and especially how I approach vegan food.
I love trekking out to Queens to check out the Thai food. I forget the name of the Thai restaurant that's in Queens that everyone goes to. I feel like they have a bunch of, you know, vegan, at least vegetarian options. What's the name of the place?
Yeah. I believe it's, I'm going to attempt saying it because I feel like I always screw it up. It's Sharipa Pie.
Yeah, Sharipa
Pie. It's on Woodside. You see it off the 7 train, off the, I think, the 51st stop. And it is a remarkable place, absolutely.
So in your new book, you delve into Thai food. You delve into some of my favorite cuisines, like with African food and Jamaican food and Latin food. What was your approach? Did you sit down and say, what's around me, or did you decide what's your favorite cuisines to eat when you're preparing up a meal for yourself? What was the process?
I think it's a little bit of all of the above. So this is my 6th book, so I've been cooking for quite a while now, and I have a real passion for ethnic food. And after doing Viva Vegan, which is all vegan Latin American recipes, and being inspired by all the shopping that I did here in Queens, because I'm very close to Jackson Heights, which is a remarkable neighborhood where, you know, one block is Indian, another block is Korean, another block is, you know, Colombian, and then Mexican, and then, you know, it's endless, really. And doing all that shopping, I, you know, for Latin stuff, I would, you know, go and eat and shop at all these other places, and I'm like, it's time to do an ethnic cookbook of all of these different, you know, cuisines that I really just love and enjoy so much. And taking all these ingredients, which are, in my opinion, there's all so many ingredients that are just naturally vegan from all these different ethnic cuisines, and combining them with familiar foods like tempeh or tofu, at least familiar if you're vegan or vegetarian, or just taking dishes that are traditional and taking out the meat and kind of reworking them a little bit so you still have that traditional flavor and the character of the cuisine, but without the meat and the dairy.
Speaking of meatless, one of my favorite things, as I'm scrolling through your lovely book, I get a lot of vegetarian and vegan books, and I will say, this is kind of like the Bible. I'm proud to have this in my possession. And one of my favorite recipes is the Jamaican curry satay patties. And I'm like, whoa, I need to make this. And you tell a great story about living in Brooklyn. We know that Brooklyn is the home to probably, I think it's the second largest population of Caribbean people outside of the Caribbean. So when I saw this recipe, I'm like, yes, maybe I'll make this my first attempt to make patties.
Yes. Absolutely. I love patties and dumplings. I think I have a whole chapter about that dedicated just to dumplings, how they're just this, like, worldwide phenomena. I mean, everybody loves something, a tasty filling wrapped up in some kind of tasty dough. And those were especially exciting for me to make because I live in Queens now, but I did live in a very West Indian neighborhood for a long time, and it was just so much fun to try to take all the stuff that I loved and, you know, and essentially veganize it.
We're going to talk about Latin faves, because I would say hands down, you are the authority on, you know, vegan Latin food. What would you say in this book are your standout Latin international recipes?
Let's see. I go back to pozole, which I really love. I love soup, but and I eat it all year round, but I really love it now that it's cold out. And one of my favorite things is just a pozole, which is a Mexican, kind of a complex Mexican soup. Not complex to make, but it just has so many different flavors and textures going on. And this one has black beans and pumpkin in the base, you know, seasoned with, like, chilies. And on the top, what I love is that you just kind of put on top all these cool, fresh, crunchy toppings, like fried tortillas or avocado or shredded cabbage. And when you start eating the whole thing together, it's just this, it's like a party in your mouth, you know, crispy, cool, spicy, soft, crunchy. I mean, I just really love that kind of stuff.
Yum, yum. All right, folks, we are going to take a short break and come back, and we're going to talk more Vegan Eats World with Terry Hope Romero. Keep listening. We'll be right back.
Every August for the past 10 years, Heritage Foods USA has had the great honor of announcing the arrival of a new generation of Good Shepherd Ranch Heritage Turkeys and a new chapter in the history of an endangered species. You have to eat them to save them. While many farmers now use the term, Frank Reese and his team raised the truest example of the original Heritage Turkey. According to the USDA, they remain the only farm allowed to use the name Heritage on their label. We hope you reserve your healthy, naturally mating, flying, standard bronze, bourbon red, white Holland, slate, black, or Narragansett turkey today. Let's do it again and support the brightest hope for the turkey. We guarantee these are the best tasting turkeys ever, or your money back. Prices start at $75. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
Welcome back to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. We are talking Vegan Eats World today. And on the phone, we have the authority. I'm calling you the authority on vegan food. She's the author of 6 titles, and she can be found at veganlatina.com, Terry Hope Romero. So I want to say I totally agree, hands down, that spices are the keys and the building blocks to a great, great dish. And just to find, like, your first chapter all about making spice blends. I have never, ever made spice blends at home. I'll spend all my money and go and buy spice blends, but I'm just totally excited that you have this in the book. What advice can you give some of our listeners about building a cabinet of international spices?
Well, one thing I want to make clear is that you can absolutely make any of these dishes with purchased spice blends. And there are many out there that are fantastic. So don't feel like, oh, no, I have to grind all my own, you know, curry powder. I mean, not at all. But if you want to take that extra step, it will absolutely reward you. Like, one of the things that I really love is that you can find so many fantastic, like, spices and big quantities in Indian grocery stores. So you can really kind of, like, build, like, a little collection just by going and kind of remixing a lot of the stuff. One of the things I really enjoyed learning to make was, like, Ethiopian spice blends, because they're just so flavorful and rich. And there's an Ethiopian, traditionally it's made with butter, but seasoned with, simmered with all these spices and ginger and things like that that really create all the flavors in this food. And I do something similar with oil and vegan butter. But making your own spices is really satisfying and a lot of fun. And it's really not too hard, you know, like if you get like a basic, like, 5 or 6 different kinds of spices, like coriander or cumin seeds or star anise, you can just toast them up and grind them yourself. And I mean, just the impact of smelling your own homegrown or home ground rather, garam masala will really, really just wake you up to what you can do at home. It's just really great. And they do last, too. They do last. So just try. Just try at least making one spice blend and see the difference. It's really made a big difference, I think, on how I approach my cooking.
And speaking of grandma masala, there's a recipe in here that I'm dying to try. I'm probably going to completely screw up the name. Is it Bele Peru? It is an Indian dish with pomegranates and cashews.
Okay. Bel Puri.
Bel Puri. See how I feel about Terry? I'm so excited. And I see that, you know, I guess I didn't realize until you have a book and all international recipes, there are so many great recipes that are full of nuts. And I love, love, love nuts. And I think particularly if you're eating vegan or vegetarian, that is the easiest way to get that mouthfeel and all that great stuff. I'm dying to try this.
Absolutely. I do use cashews also as a basis for dairy. That's a pretty popular thing going on now in vegan cooking. Instead of using something like purchased soy cream or something like that, making your own like cream out of cashews and cooking with it is also very satisfying and is very rich and flavorful and has that kind of sweetness that's kind of missing from soy creams or, you know, factory made stuff. So, yeah, definitely, if you don't have a problem eating nuts, enjoy them and relish them in vegan cuisine.
Terry, thank you so much for coming on Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. I am excited. Congratulations again on your new project. I'm totally in love with it. It's a great book. It's actually 300 international recipes for savoring the planet, Vegan Eats World. Terry, thanks so much.
Thank you.
More Budos Band on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Okay, guys, you know I love a celebration. And on the phone to talk her latest book, The Meat Lovers, Meatless Celebration, is Kim O'Donnell. Kim, welcome back to Hot Grease.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
You know, so last time you were on, was that 2 years ago?
Yes, can you believe it?
2010? Yes, the Meatless Monday revolution is like, it's taken over now. What do you think about that now, just knowing that, you know, you came out with a book and everyone's talking Meatless Monday,
mm-hmm.
and everyone is, you know, on board to make at least one day a week meatless?
You know, when I was writing this proposal in 2009 or 2008. The last thing I thought was that Meatless Monday as a concept would become the phenomenon that it has become. I am just as astonished but also delighted to see how, you know, a once fledgling nonprofit public health campaign is now, you know, part of our vernacular. It's pretty interesting and really fast that, you know, half of Americans who were surveyed like in the last year or so actually know what the words Meatless Monday mean. Yeah, pretty interesting. So certainly as an author of a cookbook with this concept in mind, it's pretty exciting, you know, and that 2 years later my book is still something that people are either coming to for the first time or still using in their kitchens, so that's very heartening. But I also think it, you know, it reflects what's going on. You know, we've got an increased consciousness about what we're eating, and we're seeing more people become either, you know, 100% vegetarian or going all the way vegan. That percentage, though, will always be really small, I think, compared to the rest of the folks, you know, the rest of our meat eaters. I mean, right now we're about a 96% meat-eating majority. But what's most fascinating is that, like, 40% of those folks, like me, probably like you and lots of other listeners, are shaking things up a bit. They are dialing back, and they are redefining, you know, what their weekly diet looks like. And it may no longer be a daily meat habit. It may be 50% or 75% or just some difference compared to the previous year. And I think that segment of the population is the one that we're going to keep seeing grow.
Yeah, and I definitely think another factor in, you know, people really getting on the Meatless Monday bandwagon, so to say, is that, you know, the economy. I mean, mm-hmm. taking a few days down a week and not having, you know, meat and spending, you know, if you have a family of four, you know,
yep.
$15 on a serving of meat, that can save a lot of money over, you know, a month's time.
Absolutely, Nicole. I mean, you're hitting it right on the head. I think, you know, people are coming to this conversation from many different angles, but, you know, we cannot ignore the reality of our budgets and, you know, the continued increased prices of food and, you know, what it does take to put food on the table. And meat is not going to get, it's, you know, we are, is also with the drought this past year, you know, increasing feed prices. I mean, that's a whole other conversation. You know, so much of our meat is coming from industrial feedlots. The reality is that even industrial meat is becoming more and more expensive and will become less and less of a reality for folks trying to get food on the table.
Exactly. So, I have to ask you this question. Planning
yeah.
seems to be the secret word into making your meals meatless. Do you plan your meals every week, Kim?
I wish I had a little wizard, you know, who... It's a nice idea, Nicole. Although, I will say that the weekend does come around, and my husband's on board, too. We do talk about, hey, what are we going to do on Sunday, and is there any way of, you know, doubling that, maybe stretching things into midweek. There is a small degree of planning, but a lot of it depends on what's happening at the farmer's market. So in Seattle, where I live, you know, in my neighborhood, I have a year-round farmer's market, so I'm really lucky to have that kind of access. But, you know, regardless of where folks live, in the dead of winter, you know, vegetables, really good, you know, it's just less appealing than it might be at the height of the season in August or even October.
Yeah, it is.
It is, but I do think planning in terms of your pantry can be really helpful. Mm-hmm. You know, I like to have three or four different kinds of legumes in the cabinets so that I've got choices, you know, whether it's lentils, which don't need soaking, or black beans for a chili, or white beans that might get a kale pesto on them and go with pasta. I mean, just to have that, and then a mix of grains as well, so that there is stuff in there that helps me just keep pushing that envelope, you know, not going back to the old way of doing things. And then having the fresh stuff in the fridge to sort of be part of it, but not worried, oh my gosh, what's in the fridge? Do I have anything? If that makes any sense. But I don't do a lot of meal planning out just because our lives are really busy, but I do like to make something on Sunday that hopefully will carry us for a couple of days.
And in your new book, you did a great job in the back in giving its title, A Week of Menus.
Thank you.
How to get a head start on your week.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of probably the most, what I love is this quart of all-purpose veggie stock.
Yeah.
Is so great, particularly in the wintertime.
Yep.
When you're like, oh my gosh, what am I going to make?
Mm-hmm.
You can pull out the stock and you can do beans and so many things. And you have other great ideas like do ahead on Friday
mm-hmm.
about washing all of your greens and your kale and romaine. I personally think I do plan out my people are like always shocked to hear that I plan out my week, my meals on Monday. For every single meal.
Good for you.
I don't know how I do it, but.
But you're saving money by doing that too.
Yeah, I mean, when I don't do that, that means those are the days that I typically forget all about, oh, it's Monday, I'm supposed to be meatless, or I end up spending more money
yep.
because I'm going to the market, you know, even more times. I mean, what allows me, and probably some of the other listeners, if you're already a part of a CSA that's, you know, year-round CSA or you go to the farmer's market, it makes it a little easier because
mm-hmm.
you can kind of have a baseline. But this is great in the back of the book that you have about making meals ahead.
Oh, yeah, and those little tricks are really helpful. And even things like let's say you're having brown rice that Sunday night. Well, make a triple batch of brown rice. That's great for fried rice the next night or reheating for lunch the next day. Or, you know, grains are going to last you a couple of days, so why not get it all done and then have it at the ready during the week? I mean, that's actually one of our tricks. Another one that we like to do is I make kale pesto a lot, and that's a recipe that I use frequently throughout the colder months, and it's probably become my preferred pesto over basil and things like parsley and cilantro. It's got a really lovely tooth to it. And I will make a batch and keep it in a glass jar and use it as a condiment for over a couple of weeks. And that's great for pasta, you know, as a pizza topping with potatoes, with roasted squash. So it's just like an extra layer of flavor, but not making this big production. It's there. It's that your version of fast food or go-to stuff. You know, you can create that.
There you have it. We're going to take a short break, and we're going to come back with more meatless celebrations. Welcome back. Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. We're chatting with Kim O'Donnell. She's the author of two meatless-focused cookbooks. So, Kim, we're in January, and Inauguration Day is coming up, and you broke your book down in such a great way where you gave, like, suggested celebrations or menus. You have a great election night menu, and I'm thinking, you can use this same election night menu for your inauguration watching. In January. So you lived in D.C. I was shocked to see this recipe, this menu in the book, because I'm like, I don't think people really think about that as a celebration. But you lived in D.C.,
yeah.
And that's how that whole idea evolved, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, in D.C., watching election night results is something of a competitive sport. I mean, you know, people, it's an all-day affair. And it's pretty much the same way when the inauguration comes around. It's people take off, and they are yipping it up in some way, shape, or form. So I imagine that there will be gatherings at people's homes, either, you know, that morning of the inauguration or just over that weekend. You know, inauguration is always on a Monday. So I imagine people are going to be getting together late January. And, you know, there's a lot of fun things that you can do rather than call up takeout and order in a pepperoni pizza. And things that might keep you nice and warm or spice things up. You know, if it's not the, I've got an apple rosemary walnut pie, you know, American is apple pie.
I was thinking about that one, yes.
Yeah. But the dough is it's a 50-50 blend of olive oil and butter, so we're cutting back a little bit on the saturated fats. You know, the Cajun blackened tofu could be really fun for that kind of celebration. It's actually done exactly the same way you would do a Cajun blackened redfish in a smoking hot cast iron skillet, dry, with your own Cajun spice blend. You could do it with red beans and brown rice. The hush puppies that I do with coconut milk. There's a lot of fun things that you could dip into, or you could make sandwiches. I've got these lentil meatballs that you can throw into a sub roll with some marinara sauce, sauteed broccoli rabe, some goodies.
And, you know, my faves that I'm dying to try, I must try them, I love a good gratin. You have a sweet potato pesto gratin and a potato turnip gratin.
Oh, yeah.
They're so easy. I think people always hear the word gratin and they think, oh, this is going to require so much work. But those are probably very easy dishes.
Yeah, and this one, you know, what what it was really fun discovering is that, you know, because blue cheese, I do it with a blue cheese sauce, and, you know, blue cheese a little goes a long way in terms of flavor, so you're actually using less dairy than you might in other cheese sauces. So that was kind of nice, to sort of give that hit of blue cheese, but not make it so cheesy, ridiculous, that you've got a stomach bomb.
Exactly. And finally, we have two more celebrations people don't need to forget about, and they can pick up your book and find some inspiration, is the big game, Super Bowl,
yeah,
and Mardi Gras. I
would
have to tell you, I never watch a football game, but I'm always geeked up because I'm like, huh, this is an excuse to make food.
Oh, yeah. And did you know that this year the big game is in New Orleans just a week before Mardi Gras?
I did not. So what should people make? So, I mean, obviously, if it's in New Orleans, I'm sure that a lot of the commercials and, you know, all the backstories are going to be talking about New Orleans. So you definitely have to give us some, what one pot or one appetizer thing to make for the big game that's Mardi Gras-centric.
Well, you know, I might say those hush puppies would be great as a starter. You know, get those out straight away. And if you wanted to do a big dish, like a centerpiece kind of thing to put on the table, I'm thinking the black-eyed pea paella.
Mm.
You know, it's still January. We still need our little dose of good luck, right? So if you didn't get it together on New Year's Day, you could do it a couple weeks later. And it's a big pan, would serve a crowd. You'd get your rice and your black-eyed peas, and you could have all your fixins, you know, later. But that's a really fun one, and it's very festive. You know, I also think that the bread pudding that I've got in here, it's actually vegan, with coconut milk and silk and tofu, and it's done Creole style. I do a little bit of bananas in there, and even a little shaved chocolate. And I learned how to make this bread pudding from New Orleans chef Frank Brightson several years ago. So I veganized it, and it turned out great. So that could be a fun one.
That sounds super fun. Kim, next time we're going to have to get you to New York City, get you in the studio, and we're going to do some super fun, because I totally love what you're doing.
You want to cook together in New York?
Yes.
You could make a date, because I'm going to be in New York a couple times in the early part of 2013, so we should think about that.
Let's make it happen. Thanks so much for coming on Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. I look forward to getting you in the studio and cooking together.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me.
Have a good one, Kim. Chat soon.
Thanks so much for tuning in to Hot Grease. Remember, I'm here every Monday live at 3:30 Eastern Time on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. But until then, always take the road less traveled.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.